Before we begin our presentation, I do want to thank those that work with the WMU, GAs and RAs in this church. I do know that they go on. We began to have our love for missions through myself, through RAs, Jan through Brownies, wasn't it? Well, no, it wasn't Brownies. That was a scout. What was it? Mission Friends.
Well, we were called Sunbeams.
Sunbeams. That's what I was trying to think of. I knew it was something what it was today. But it was called Sunbeams back in the days of Noah. And now it's called Mission Friends. And that's where we began to have our love for missions. And when we went through, you have to go through a process to go to the international field. And as we were going through the process, you had to give your testimony about when mission began to become alive to you. And I would say about 80% of the people to 90% of the people that shared, that was going through the program to go to the foreign mission field with us, made the statement that they started loving missions during RAs and GA days. I encourage you to continue to teach children about missions, teach them about other parts of the world, because that's where the seed is planted, and God uses that to grow up missionaries. Jan and I did serve on the mission field for 6.5 years. I now serve as a missionary here in the United States, so really haven't changed a whole lot. We served there 6.5 years. We were 2 years in Russia. We were 4.5 years in South Asia, where we were itinerant teachers. We traveled all the time and taught. We would go into a different setting every week. Every Friday, we pack up our 2 suitcases and our 2 carry-ons, and we would travel to a new location and begin to teach again. And we did that for 4.5 years. Not constant traveling, because we were off a couple of months at a time back in Chiang Mai, Thailand, at our home base. But we did have the privilege of going back to India this year, and we just kind of want to share a little bit of that with you. And, of course, the mission started right here in Fort Wayne. We've met at the International Airport here, and this is the mission team that went. You have Pastor Amos from Huntington Baptist Church. You have Jan, myself, and then Sister Bethany. If you do not know Sister Bethany, she is a government worker. And in India, that's how she was introduced. Every time that we would go someplace, Adam would introduce Bethany as, this is Sister Bethany, the government worker. And she actually had a greater prestige than we did there. She didn't do anything. If you know her or see her, tell her I said that. But she's the only one who got her picture in the paper, because she's a government worker. Now, in India, government workers are very important people. Because they're the only ones with a guaranteed salary, and they're the only ones that can buy property, because they're the only ones with a guaranteed salary. So government workers are very important people. So whenever Adam found out that she worked at the library and was a government worker, man, that put her on a pedestal above all of us. And every place we go, we met some people on the road one day. And he introduced us and turned around, and I heard him introducing Bethany. Now, this is Sister Bethany, and she is a government worker. Oh, a big deal. But anyway, that's your mission team. This is Sister Bethany on the plane. We had a one-hour flight from here to Chicago, and then we had a 14.5-hour flight from Chicago to Delhi. And that is a long, long time to be on an airplane. But it was a direct flight. We did not stop any place in between, which is a blessing in that. This is us arriving in Delhi. This is the hotel we stayed at in Delhi, at the Star Hotel. It's a very nice hotel, very much Indian, but it's a very nice hotel. And you can see some of the guys in the back. They're anxiously waiting on us to take our luggage to the room, which was, this was about 10 o'clock at night, Indian time. And most of us had been up for quite a long time at that point. This is Amos relaxing in our room. As you can see, our rooms, we had 2 single beds in this room. And this is us getting ready for our devotional time. We did have a devotion every night together, and we'd have a time of sharing, a time of Bible reading, time of sharing together. And usually we would share something that we experienced throughout the day that was something different for us. But we would have that. Then we'd also have a prayer time. And this is us getting ready for a 4.5-hour night, because we had to be up early the next morning to move on to Hyderabad. And this is us on the airplane going to Hyderabad. The gentleman that's sitting next to us works in the music industry and a Christian music industry, and I learned a lot about him. I forget what his name was, John something, but I forget his last name. This is us arriving in Rajahmundry, and Jan will begin to share with you a little bit about that.
As you can see, we all have our flowers on. They garland you. In Hawaii, it's the leis. There, it's garland. So you're a special person when you arrive, and you always get a garland. Those were marigolds this time, and they smell. Sometimes I like when you're there in the spring, there's certain flowers that have a really good smell, and they really smell good. Marigolds don't have much of a smell. But they garland us at the airport, and that's Adam there in the middle with us, our host for the next week. We arrived on Friday afternoon, and he picked us up there, and then we had another about two and a half hour drive to his place before we finally arrived. I think it was about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon that day. We went to the Day Spring Children's Home. This is the home that Adam and his brothers founded many years ago. I think it's almost 20 years now, they said, that they've been working. It's mainly Adam. His brother Eli lives there with him, and he does the schoolwork. And then their brother David Livingston, he works out in the jungles. But he is in and out at different times to come and visit them. This is the little town of Vees West Raipurum, as you can see there, of India. It's just a small little village. Here's the Sandaputi brothers. You have, I'm standing here, Eli. And like I said, he runs the school. Adam, he's in charge of the children's home. And he's sort of like a director of missions. A lot of the pastors look to him for guidance and direction, and they're always there with their hand out because they're always hungry. There's never enough money, and he tries to help in any way he can. And then the last one is David Livingston.
When Adam came into this area, he had nothing. He did not have a rupee in his pocket when he went there, just to show you what God has done through the years with him.
This is the whole Sandaputi family. We got them all together, and even David Livingston and his wife's son lives there with them year-round, he and his wife and two children. So there's four bedrooms downstairs. Adam and his wife and children have one bedroom. Eli and his wife and children have another bedroom. The nephew and his wife have a bedroom, and then the other is the guest bedroom. So when David and his wife come in, they use it. And then in the last several years, they were able to finish the upstairs, so we were guests, and we got to go up. I'd have rather been down because it was over 100 degrees, and when the, you know, heat rises, so it was really hot upstairs, but they put us upstairs. We had the guest quarters. But this is Adam's family, his girls. He has four girls and one son, Moses. And then this is Eli and his family. They have three boys and one girl. And then this is David Livingston's son on the end, Solomon, and his two sons.
David works up in the Orissa area, and the Orissa area is where all of the problems was a couple of years ago, where they had a lot of deaths, pastors were killed, churches were burnt, destroyed, and they're still scattered up in that area. We'll tell you a little bit more about Orissa area in a few moments, but that's where David works. He worked just south of the Orissa area where all the persecution was.
And he's battling diabetes. So he's had part of his toe taken off and stuff, and that's why they sort of want him to come in out of the jungle and stay with them. But he says, no, his ministry's there, so he's heading back up into the jungle. Here's a mode of transportation. We're leaving what we call the compound. They have about an acre, and it's enclosed with a fence, again, for security purposes. There's a lot of theft even among themselves there. So they have the bicycles and the scooter, and that's Adam and he taking off one morning going to find the bank. This is
Moses giving me a massage. I need it. This is our Joseph table. In India, it's a very strange thing because most Indians will not eat with Americans. So they put us what I call the Joseph table. If you go over and read the book of Genesis, you'll remember that in that story, Joseph ate at a table by himself, and the Egyptians would not eat with them. And when the brothers came in, they put them at the separate table, and Joseph had his own table where he ate. Well, this is why I started calling this the Joseph table, because it seems to be true all over that part of the world that they just don't eat with us, and they've set us off at a table by ourselves. Even if we're in the same room, they'll be sitting on the floor eating and put us at a table by ourselves. Even though we wanted to eat with them and fellowship with them during that time, they never would because that's just almost taboo in that area. This is a couple of the ladies preparing our supper for us one night, and this is just a picture of the compound.
We did eat upstairs. They brought the table upstairs, and there was like a foyer out there, and that's where we ate. But normally the table would have been downstairs in the dining area for them, which is just a big room downstairs. This is the kids coming in from school one day. The school's about a mile from the orphanage, so the kids walk there of a morning. They walk home for lunch, and then they walk back for their afternoon classes, and then they walk back. So they get about 4 miles of walking in a day, the kids do, going to the school. They have a little bus that they've gotten, so if it is raining, they put some of the little ones on. There's about 120 to 125 kids in the orphanage most all of the time. This is our bedroom. And we were fortunate. We had an air conditioner. They got an air conditioner and put in our room. So believe it or not, we turned that thing on at night and let Amos and Bethany sweat it out like in 100 degrees. I'm sorry. I'm getting old. I took the air conditioner.
They wanted to experience the missionary life, and we let them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. This is the bathroom. When they refinished the upstairs, they made a boys' room, a boys' bathroom, a girls' bathroom, and then they put one out on the porch. So Bethany and I had one, and he and Amos shared one, and then there was one out on the porch. This is just a shot of looking out at the kids, the area there. They're sitting around there. They're just talking, and I don't know, kids are playing around. They have three water buffalo now. They've got two big ones and a baby one. And they've been able to lease some land across from the orphanage now so they can take the buffalo over and let them graze. Before, they had to keep them there on the compound and buy their hay for them, so that was expensive. So this way they can take them over and let them graze and then bring them back every day. And as you can see, they're going by our sign with our name on it. Adam had emailed us right before we went, and he said, could you send us a picture of you all? Because when we were there teaching, we tried to stay low key, because you didn't want to cause any problems in the community. It is a Hindu area, all Hindu. And of course, they're Christians, and they know that they're Christians. But we always try to keep it low key. So we said, yeah. So he wanted a picture of all four of us. So when we pull up, I mean, they've got these big, they've blowed these things up, made great big posters, had them out on the fences and every place. And you'll see more pictures of them in a few minutes.
Okay, this is the Day Spring School. Eli is the president of the school. And this is a picture of the principal and his wife. They're the ones that really govern and run the school. This is a picture of the teachers there in the school. They have about 400 to 500 students in the school. The 125 kids come from the orphanage to the school. And we will share more about that experience here in just a few moments as we talk to you about the children. But these are the teachers. And here's a picture of some of the kids. They're sitting in an open assembly with us as we're sharing with them. I took these pictures just so you kind of see the classrooms and how they sit. They sit there for 8 hours a day on them benches to study. And this is one of the schools that people seek to come to because of the teaching that they get and the standards that they get. When I showed you Eli's picture, you saw trophies sitting on the desk. They have just won those for academic reasons in the school. So it's a very good school. People really want to come there. Here's just another shot of the school. As you can see, there's holes in the roof. The sides are open, and they really need some work done on their school. Here's just another shot of the school with Amos standing in there speaking. And here's a picture of Jan and Sister Bethany, the government worker, showing them where we're from in Indiana with Eli translating for them.
Okay, so many of you have heard about Sudan Su. For the past 3 or 4 years, we've shared with you. He's one of the pastors that works up in the Orissa area where the persecution was really bad for started in two Decembers, and it eased up a little bit, and then the next December it started again, where they came in and the radical Hindus was persecuting the Christians. They burnt down many of the churches. They tore down others. They burnt the Christians' homes. They killed some of the Christians that didn't get away from them fast enough. And this went on for like 2 years. They had all this persecution. And Sudan Su, he was one of our translators when we taught up in that area, when we were teachers and we taught. And he's a very, very godly man. Again, he's sort of like a DOM. The men in that area looked to him for guidance. And they had many church points, preaching points. And when all this persecution started, well, everybody headed for the jungle. He was on the run for about 6 months. He had a death threat out for him. He would email us occasionally when we get into a town and let us know that he was okay. But these guys, they're scared now to start their churches up, even though there's not been any persecution in this past year. and they have a new, I don't know what you call them, sort of like a governor over that area that is favorable to Christians and is sort of watching out for them. The guys are still afraid to start their churches up again. And so that was a big concern. When he found out we were coming, and we told him we just couldn't afford to go up to Orissa also, we didn't have enough time to travel that far up, he said, well, I'll come and see you. So bless his heart, he traveled all day by train while we were traveling by plane. And we finally said, we've just got to go sleep Friday night. We were so tired. And he got in later than we did, and he stayed in the hotel there in town, and he was up then Saturday morning and met us there at Adam's house to share with us. And we didn't get a very long visit with him, because when he had arrived at the hotel, word had reached him that his wife's nephew had dropped dead suddenly that day. So he had to get back on the train right after he visited with us and take off and go back to Arista. But this is his son, Baba. And he, again, is one that I can get email through to. The email is just terrible up in that area. They're up in the mountainous area, and the lines are down a lot. Right now they're having lots of rain, and when the rains come, the lines are down, so you have trouble getting in contact with him. But we had a really good visit with him, but he'd really shared his heart and the heartache he has, because these guys need to get back and get their churches started, and they're just afraid. They're really afraid.
They're afraid, and they don't have any means of support. They have no way to make a living, have no food, and I just got an email from Sudan Sue this past week where he has a desire to see some of those guys taken care of. For $50 a month, you can help take care of a pastor in that area to rebuild a church, reestablish it, and begin to do the work again. And this is not a lifelong thing. Sudan Sue would like to have a 3-year commitment from people. $50 a month to help them start, because he said, we do not want something permanent. What we want is just somebody to give us a hand and to help us. So this is what he's doing. They're also big on gifts. And they brought us a gift. If you ever come by my house, remind me, I'll show you the fish that they gave us while we were there. And it's a blessing to get a gift from these guys because they have nothing and giving us something. And I'll keep this fish and set it out. It's really the ugliest thing you've ever seen. But I'll keep it and set it out just because he gave it to us. Got stopped at every place in the airport I came back through. I did not go through customs any place that they didn't take my fish out and look at it and stand there and laugh. And this stupid American coming over here buying this thing. And I'd have to explain to him, I didn't buy it. It was a gift. And that's, gift. Yeah, sure. Okay. So then they would let us go on through. But they inspected it every place we came from. This is a group of the guys that we taught while we were there teaching in Lead. And they came in because we were there, which was a special blessing to us, because some of them traveled a long ways to be there just to see us and have fellowship with us again. This is us going to one of the churches. Jan took this picture just to show you where the church was and what we were driving a vehicle on. You'll see the vehicle here in just a moment. There's our vehicle. We're standing outside of it. And we were driving between trees down a cow path so that we could get back to the church. It's just some other shots. This is the church that we went to. Here we are with the pastor. And this is an inside shot. I don't think we got an outside shot of this building. This is a store. It's one of the kiosks. If you need a soda, if you need anything, this is a place that you would go to. It's just like going to your local store as you would go down to a convenience store here. This is your convenience store there. You can get just about whatever you need in that little kiosk. This is one of the churches, a second church that we visited, and this is the pastor. He also was one of our students. This is one of the better churches that we got to visit and got to see. And this is just a shot from the outside. This is the next house next door, to just give you kind of a feel for that area. Go ahead.
This is another one of the pastors that we had, and he was thrilled to show us his church. Again, most of them were very small. This is some of the people from his church that came by that were there. They waited around because we got there. We went visiting Sunday after we had already had worship services, so they waited around. And then we went on Monday, so anybody that lived close came so that they could see us. This is another shot of outside of one of the churches.
Same one. Same church.
He's also starting a second church, the middle guy, the white-haired guy, in the town. And he had a little lot there. So they are laying the cornerstone. and having prayer because he's going to put another building up, and it's going to be very small. It was a very small little lot, but he wanted Dean and Amos to pray over it and lay the cornerstone for it that day. Most of these guys have planted not only one, but two, and one had even planted five churches in the last few years. So they are really doing a good work there. This is another one of the pastors that we went by to see his church, just a small little concrete building. I had gotten from NAM the power bands that we had with the beads on them, and each bead stood for something different. You know how the sin was black and the red was the blood and all. Well, they've come up with it. It's a disc, and you unfold each piece, and it's got a Bible verse, and you can explain that color, and then you flip it another piece till it comes out. It's about that long. So I took those, and we were giving those to those pastors so that they would have something to share. This is just another shot at one of the churches, part of their family coming in to see us.
Pastor's wife and children.
Okay. This is going down the road. We're in our vehicle, and we come up on an you have this all over the place, but it's an oxen pulling a wagon full of coconuts. We were down in the Delta area, so there was a lot of coconut trees.
This is one of the major roads, by the way. It's kind of like U.S. 27. So you have a lot of trucks on it. You have buses on it. You have cars on it. And then you have this. So try to imagine running about 45 miles an hour down the road and coming up against this.
This is another one of the churches. This is another one where they didn't have the walls up yet, so they had just taken pieces of paper and tarp and stuff and put them together to make their walls. And most of them just had like a tarp down on the floor. You walked in on the floor, and they sit on the floor. There's no benches or pews in most of them, so you just sit on the floor. So they have tarps down or something for them to sit on.
And whenever you go into a church there, you always take your shoes off and leave them on the outside of the door. You never wear your shoes into the church because the church is holy ground.
And there the women sit on one side and the guys sit on the other side. They're segregated.
Okay, we did a crusade while we was there on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. On Monday night, I'll flip through some of these pictures while I'm showing you. I want to show you this one first. The Joyous Event. There it is. The Joyous Event, renowned international speaker. Isn't that marvelous? I just thought y'all would like to know that I'm renowned and I'm internationally known now. But Adam has a way of glamorizing things, I can say that. But in the three-night crusade, on Monday night, we had 600-700 people at it. On Tuesday night, we had a little over 1,000. On Wednesday night, we had between 1,500 and 2,000 people at the crusade. During that time, we had 200 confirmed decisions. Confirmed decisions mean that they actually had a name and an address of a person that had made a decision during this crusade. They were all Hindu people that were committing their lives to Christ that Adam and his brothers would follow up on after we left. So it was really a good crusade. Their sister Bethany, the government worker again. Go ahead.
I do have to tell you, we laughed all week, bless her heart, at her picture. She didn't have a picture. When we sent the email, said Adam would like a picture of you. So when she had gotten her cell phone last Christmas, she just took it out like that, took a picture of herself. She thought they just wanted to see sort of what she looked like, so she sent it. We got there, and here this is blowed up all over town. So we would laugh every time we'd drive by. She was so aggravated, you know, that's the picture that she's got in India of her face.
Pastor Amos's, and there's ours. As Jan said, this was posted everywhere. These are just some shots of the crusade, and Jan can...
Well, the crusade was held on the school lot of the school, the Day Spring School. So the kids got out of school that week. So they were really happy that they had the crusade. But they set tents up in this lot. And each night as it grew, then they would add another tent and extend it on out in the school lot there. And that's, Adam's always wanting me to do something. So I had to say a prayer for the choir that night. That's David Livingston. He led the choir. And the choir was some of the kids from the school, from the orphanage. And they sang. And we started at 6:30. And they would sing until 7:30, quarter to 8. And then the preaching would start, and we'd get home about midnight.
This was about 5.5-hour services, in case you all think we're going real long this morning. I just thought I'd let you know that. These are just some of the pastors that was there that would come up and sing during the crusade. This is some of the ladies that sang. They're actually from the Day Spring orphanage. This is the music that we had. And just some other shots of the crusade. As we said, we would get there about 6:30, quarter to 7. The building would be almost empty. Then by the time that you would get up to speak, the place would just be packed. It's amazing how people just kind of drift in and come in for this. These are just some other people that was having a part. At the close of every crusade, they do not have an altar call like we do, but people will always come down and want you to pray for them. And that's what we're doing here. These people have come forward, and you just lay your hands on them, on their heads, and you pray for them. And they come down the whole time of the ending of it.
You never for sure. Sometimes they're telling you they got a headache or their throat is sore or something. And sometimes I'm not sure. So I'm very general in the prayer, because with the Hindus, I don't want it to be a blessing for them, you know, to think that everything's okay between them and God. So you've got to be careful. Of course, they don't understand what you're saying anyway, but I know that God knows. So I'm just very careful on what you pray. If you knew for sure it was a headache or a sore throat or something, that's okay. But if it was something else and I wasn't for sure, I was very careful, because they put a lot of emphasis. For some reason, they think that white people, Americans, have a better connection to God than what they do. So they're really big on that, coming and wanting you to give them a blessing. They want you to pray and give them a blessing.
Okay. On Wednesday night, when we had between 1,500 and 2,000 people at the meeting, Adam told me on Wednesday morning, we're going to feed them tonight. And I said, but Adam, you're going to have a big crowd. We're going to feed them tonight. The Lord has said for me to feed them. So this is the line that they're going through. They actually get through the line faster than Baptists do with 80 people. They just got through the line fast. I guess they didn't stand there and try to decide which food they wanted to eat, is what it was. They were through in about an hour's time. After that, they had fed all the people. And these are just some shots of them preparing the food. They prepared the food on the compound where we stayed. And we walked down and instructed and looked over to make sure they were doing it right.
That was chicken that they were fixing there. They were putting the spices in it. These guys are opening up bags of chicken. I forget how many pounds. They told me in kilos, and I forget now how many pounds of chicken that they brought in that day. But I do know that Mary Helen one night fixed chicken livers. And, of course, he and Amos raved about them. Well, we have probably 100 or 200 pounds of chicken and all these livers. So we got chicken livers from that on. You know, they
we ate good the rest of the week.
Which I hate chicken livers. They like chicken livers, so she's accommodating them. Bethany couldn't take the spices. She's sitting there, oh, my mouth is on fire. So we get plain white rice and all this plain stuff. The rest of the time it's like, thank you all. This is really good.
You oughtn't to cry. You're on the
Yeah. Mission. This is just some shots of the cooking pots and everything that they brought in and of them preparing it right there on the compound with all the kids and everybody. So there wasn't any FDA workers watching to see.
There I am. I'm the FDA worker.
Yeah, he was checking them out there. Okay. The next part is just about the children. Now, we did get to minister to the children. It was good that they were out of school all week, because normally when we were there teaching, the kids were up and they were going to school when we were going over to the church to teach. At lunch, we would get to wave at them when they walked home because we were having lunch. And then in the afternoon when we had finished teaching about 4, they had gotten back from school. But they have chores when they get back. They have certain things that they all have to do. They have homework time. They have like an hour or so set apart for that. They eat, and then they go to the church every night for worship time, and then it's bedtime. So we didn't really get to spend a lot of time just with the kids. But this week, with them being out of school, they were around there on the compound a lot. So we had a lot of fun with them. I hated Greg's not here this morning, because Greg was the one this year that asked any church that would like to, their VBS money that they took up for the offering, if they would like to give it to this to us as we were going to give to the children there. And through that, several of the churches here in the association, their offering that they took up, we took $1,960 from the children here in the Northeast Indiana Association. And then the Bible study group that I'm in with the ladies, they gave over $200. So we had over $2,000 that we got to take and use for the children. You can see them lined up here. The courtyard is made out of like blocks. And each block, each kid stands in a block. They know where to go and stand, and they got them divided, girls on one side, boys on the other, so they would call for them to come. Here they're all lined up. These are just some shots of them. But we were able, with that money, that $2,000, we asked Adam, we said, what's the biggest thing that the kids need? And he said, well, since we have the school, and they all go to the school, and this school is on the British thing because the British had control there for years, they all wear uniforms. The whole school has uniforms, except for our 120 kids. They go to school, and they don't have uniforms. So the kids make fun of them. It makes them feel even worse. They're already orphans, and then they're being made fun of at school because they don't look like all the other kids. So he said, if that, and they need shoes and socks. Most of the kids don't have shoes and socks at all, don't have any flip-flops. So we said, okay, we'll start with the shoes and socks. He said that was the most important thing. So we figured out what that was going to cost, and there was money left. So we said, okay, then we can do the uniforms. So we were able to give each child their shoes and socks and have their uniforms. Now, they're being made. They had the tailor come in. We'll show you shots of those, too. The tailor came, measured the kids, so all of the kids will have their uniforms. And when Adam took us back to the airport in Rajahmundry, he picked up the material there because he said he could get a better material in that town and at a better cost. So he was bringing it back, and the tailor will start now. They'll set their sewing machines up there, and they'll start, and they'll make all the kids a uniform. And there was still a little bit of money left. And he said, well, he would like to do something for the property that would help the kids. So they had one spigot out in the yard that the kids would wash their hands, and then after they ate, they would wash their plate off and wash their hands. And he said, I'd like to put a trough in and have several spigots, and that way more of them, they can get in there faster. They can line up, you know, three, four, five, wash their hands, wash their plate, and go on, and then not all be out in the courtyard. So that's what he's going to do with what was left over. So that $2,000 is going to do a lot for the kids. Our dentist, when we were getting our teeth cleaned back in the fall, he mentioned to our dentist where we were going and said, you know, would you like to make a donation? So he sent us with about 150 toothbrushes. So the kids got their toothbrushes that night. They got Dora the Explorer and SpongeBob, as if they knew. But that's what they got. So they were thrilled to death. And then we had collected just different things. Bethany's mom had bought a package or two of the, well, those bands, you know, look like silly bands, couldn't they? So there the kids are. We gave them out, and they didn't know what they were, so we're showing them, lay them down, and then you can see the figure, the design. So that's what they're doing. They're checking those out. And we took pens and just different things for them, so we passed all of that out for them.
These are the shoes that they brought in. Instead of taking them to the store, as I thought we would do, you know, in America, you would take them to the shoe store. Adam and I go to the shoe store, and he tells the guy what we're doing, and here's the shoes they brought. They bring two big things of shoes out for us, and they stack them against the wall. They line the kids up, and they fit them right there on site. And Jan's going to talk about the shoes because I get too emotional every time I talk about it and every time I look at these kids receiving shoes. And some of them never had a pair of shoes on in their life. I mean, it's amazing. It brings tears to your eyes to sit there and watch these kids. And I was telling Jan later, you know, Christmas is coming up and our grandkids will get stuff and they'll look at it and throw it aside. These kids didn't throw their stuff aside. And this is what Christmas is really all about to me.
Yeah, they were thrilled to death. There he has all the shoe boxes lined up, and the kids lined up, and they came up to him. He had a little piece of paper there, and they stood on that piece of paper, whoever was next. And he would just stand there, and he'd look down at their foot, and he would say something to the boy, and they'd pull out a box. And almost 90% of the time, he got the right size. They would put their foot down in there, and it would be, you know, big enough for them. They also got a pair of socks. And so they got their shoes and socks, and they were thrilled to death. They went over, and I said, you know, let's label them. So Adam and Eli, their kids, sat down with permanent markers and put their initials on their shoes so that they wouldn't get mixed up. So you can see the kids there. It was, you know, they were just thrilled to death with those shoes. And I told them, I said, well, let's try the shoes on with your socks because it may, you know, be different. Some of them, when they put their socks on, they had the heels up on top. They didn't have a clue how to put socks on. So, no, we just turn them over and put your heel down here. So they were just thrilled to death. Here's the little boys. They were getting fitted there. See the smiles. They just were so thrilled with these shoes. And one little girl, he's got a picture of it coming up here. We did. We both were fighting back tears with her. She sat down, and the shoes, each shoe was in a plastic sleeve. And these little cardboard boxes were nothing like ours. I mean, it's a cheap cardboard. They were falling apart. So that she would open up her box. She took out one shoe, and she took it out of the sleeve, and she looked at it. She put it back in that plastic sleeve, laid it down, took the other one out, pulled it out of the sleeve, looked at it, put it back in the sleeve, and then she put the lid down on, patted it, took her socks out. She took them out of the sleeve. She kept her plastic, looked at them, put them back in, sat there. There she is with the biggest smile on her face. She did that, I bet, 3 or 4 times. She just, you know, she'd open up that box and go through the whole thing again. Some of the girls came up to me and they go, oh, this is the best day of our life. The best day of our life. Standing there with a box of shoes and a pair of socks. So it was really, really wonderful. And I thank all of you and the boys and girls here and the other boys and girls who gave the money that made this possible for these boys and girls to have their shoes and socks. And they are going to take pictures of them when they get their uniforms. So I know they're going to be thrilled to death to be dressed up and have their uniforms on like all the other kids at school.
All that God let us do while we were there, this was the day.
There they are. They're showing you their boxes. They've all got them. And Adam, the older kids, they're responsible for like maybe 7 or 8 of the younger ones. So an older boy is responsible for 7 or 8 of the girl, you know. And boy, he laid the law down. He told those older ones, he said, you are responsible. If even one shoestring is broke, you are going to pay for it. So you make sure that they put their shoes away. They keep them put up, and I'm sure they make them polish them. And these boys are going, because he said, they will not lose these shoes, they will not lose these socks, and you're responsible to make sure that each one of these kids takes care of them. Each kid in there, they sleep in just a big room, the girls, and then the boys are in a big room. They each have a little metal box, and that's where their belongings are at. That's what they have. They don't have, you know, dressers or anything like that. They have a mat, they roll it down on the floor at night, and they sleep like that.
She told you the uniforms they had, also the shoes. The difference between the other kids that came to the school and the orphanage children was the orphan children didn't have shoes. So now they have uniforms and shoes.
Mrs. Adam just explaining the rules to them that they have to take care of those. Here's the tailor that came in, and he's measuring the kids to get their uniforms. And they're writing their name down and their measurements, and then he'll come in and start cutting out the material and sewing it up for them. So that was a fun day. That took most of the afternoon one day doing all of that, and the kids were happy, and we were too. This is a little girl that just broke our hearts again. They, of course, you don't have washing machines. You wash your clothes usually in any kind of water you can find. They're fortunate they do have a pump there on the property, and they wash their clothes there. She, I'm guessing she was maybe 7 or 8, but she was tiny. They're really small people. So, but she was probably maybe 7 or 8, and so we caught her doing her laundry, so we went to watch her. She pumped her water, and she got the clothes wet, and then they have that stone there, and they take soap, and they rub on their clothes, and then she'll beat it. They beat it on the, there, and they roll it up. They got a rhythm to it. They got a whole thing how they do it, and so she's standing there, and she's washing her clothes out. Adam said all the kids have about 3 outfits. That's all they've got. They've got about 3 outfits, 2 to 3 outfits. So they have to keep them washed up every day. This is the roof. And so that's where all the laundry's hung to dry or laid down on the ground to dry. They got clotheslines every place. And he was talking in about what they needed the most, and their daughters, their 2 oldest daughters, live in another city about 3 hours away, and they've started an orphanage. They each have a home that they live in, and they each got kids. They've got about 25 between the 2 of them. And they said, well, Dad, if they've got money, one thing that would be good if you had a washing machine, because some of the little kids are like 2, 3 years old that have been dropped there, and they had hired 2 ladies to come in and do their laundry, but one of the ladies got AIDS, and the other lady left, so there was nobody to wash the little kids' clothes. And so if you had a washing machine, that would really help out. So Amos said, well, their church had benevolent money, and they sent money back to them so that they could buy a washing machine for these kids to be able to have their clothes washed and not have to be out there when they're only 4 and 5 out there washing their clothes.
Since that time, Adam has sent me an email, and they're getting tremendous rain in that area, which is, this is the dry season. When we were there, the rice had just come in and was just starting to come in. Within another week, they would be in the fields harvesting the rice. And, of course, they depend on the rice crop for food. And the day we left, there was a front that came in to the area. And it had been raining all that time, and the rice fields are now flooded again. And they can't get the water out of the rice, which means that the rice is going to rot in the field because the people can't get in to harvest the rice. So people were coming to him seeking food, and some of them have been without food for 5, 6, 7 days because there's just no food, and the workers that would go into the field can't get into the field to get the rice. So pray for them during these days, because it's going to be some difficult days for them because of the rain.
We're not sure, but we got a sneaking feeling that when he got the money, he used it to feed the people instead of buy the washer. So
he would.
He may not still have the washing machine. Okay, and they wanted me to do something with the ladies for a couple of mornings. So the ladies would come there to the church, and we met. We had about between 40 and 50. Again, they just sort of drift in. We started meeting about 11 that morning and went till 12:30 or quarter to 1, and they just sort of drifted in. So I took a few shots then. We had a good time, had a really good time with them. And Adam's oldest daughter, she translated for me. A shot of some of the ladies. And then we had free time. We got to go shopping every once in a while.
Go shopping. Here they are in the shop. Whenever you go to a shop, you go in, they will seat you. Sometimes they'll give you something to drink. This shop I don't think did. But a lot of times they'll give you a cold drink or whatever it is that you want to drink. And then they just start throwing stuff out on the floor for you to look at.
Bethany wanted a salwar kameez.
Yeah, okay. Bethany wanted a salwar. This is Amos. He was getting one for Emily also. They just start throwing the stuff out on the floor so you can look at it. And if you see something you like, they open it up. And if you say no, they'll fold it back up, put it back in the sack, and get you out another one. This is Domino's Pizza. I kept telling Amos the whole time as we were getting ready to go to India. I said, you know, once we finish out with Adam, we'll come in back to Hyderabad and we will go get us a pizza. And Amos kept looking at me real weird. And then on, I think it was Saturday, we were at Domino's, and we were sitting there eating, and Amos looked over at me and he said, now I understand why you kept talking about coming to Domino's. Because after a week of nothing but Indian cuisine, it's good to have a little bit of taste of America. And the Domino's there is much like, that. Here we are shopping again. This man remembered us. We'd not been there since 04. But he remembered who we was, I guess because we're Americans. I don't know.
Spent a lot of money in that shop.
Yeah, well, we spent some money there, too. Hyderabad is the pearl capital of the world. And we did not know that till the first time we went there. So we got a lot of pearls while we were there. All of our family has pearls. And Jan doesn't have her pearls on today. She should have wore her pearls. And this is us just walking back, I think, to the hotel through the streets. Also, during our free time, we went out to the ocean, Indian Ocean, and one of the largest temples in India is there. This is the temple to the monkey god. I forget the name of it right now, but they worship the monkeys in India. The monkey god is a very important god because tradition says that way, way back in time, man was in trouble and they were being invaded by people from outer space. And when the people were trying to invade them from outer space, they could not defeat them. The man could not defeat them, and the monkeys rose up and defeated them and destroyed those that were coming in. And you never know when these people are going to come in again. So you've got to honor the monkey because you may need the monkey to defend you again someday. So we have temples all over India to the monkey god. This is just another shot of it. Here's another shot of the temple. And this is a lot of money goes into this. So these statues and stuff cost just a large compound. It's the largest monkey god compound in India. And here they are in the Indian Ocean. They had not, Jan had been in it before, but Amos and Sister Bethany, the government worker, had not been. So we wanted to let them have that opportunity to go into that nice, clean, clean ocean.
And you don't see a lot of people there because they don't do sunbathing and swimming and stuff like we do. And if they do go in, the guys, they can strip down and go in a pair of shorts, but the girls go in their clothes. So it's just, you know, it's a pain to go in with all your clothes on, be sopping wet. So don't go there. You don't see many people. This is a beach house. If you'd like to rent one there, that's housing there on the beach that you could stay in.
You'd probably stay there for free if you want
to.
Yeah,
probably. And then as we were going out to some of the churches, we kept seeing these women underneath a tarp. And we said, well, what are they doing? And Adam said, well, that's a cashew grove. And the ladies are the ones that you know, get them out of the shells and hulls and stuff. So as we were coming back, we pulled over, and the ladies were working there. And it was really interesting. The black is where they have cooked them or put them in the fire or something to get them. And then they set and they beat with a rock to get them out of the shell. So they're raw cashews. They're good. We always bought raw cashews when we were there and would eat them. But we got to see them. And those ladies work from sunup to sundown. And it was, what, 6 pounds a day, something like that, that they shell out. And they get, would be equal to maybe $1 a day. Not quite that much. And they do it year round.
Every day.
And then the boys, Moses and them, asked, said, brother, when is your birthday? And he said, well, it's in November. And they said, well, we want to honor you. We're going to do an Indian shower for you. So he was really scared all day. He didn't know if he's got to strip down or what he was going to have to do. And they came and got him that night. And now you're going to see some shots of where they did, he and Amos, because they always do a shower for him on their birthday. It was dark, so it was hilarious. They shampooed them, and they put oil on their hair, and they rubbed them. They gave them a massage. And then they had these big buckets of water, and they just go over and just throw them on top of them. Then they got the hoses out, and they started hosing them down. The kids were having a blast. They had a ball. As soon as they started finishing, I went to the house real quick. I didn't want them to get any ideas on the girls. But they say that's something that they do for the men a lot of times on their birthday. They'll have them a shower where they say they're giving them a massage, and they, you know, like I said, they shampoo.
I didn't think it was near that funny, but.
Because he was so worried all day that he was going to take all his clothes off. And we were talking to the other girls, and we got tickled about it, and he kept saying, what are y'all talking about? So he was really worried when they came to get him that he would have to, what they were going to do to him.
Remember, you're real hoarse. You got to watch your voice.
It was just funny.
We went on from there. We went to Hyderabad, where we did ministry with the Banjara Gypsies. This is the hotel we stayed in. That's a picture of Jan and Sister Bethany, the government worker, up on the porch of the hotel. It's a nice hotel. It's very Indian, very medium in price. It only cost us about $35, $36 a night, $40 a night. So it's very cheap. When we traveled in that area, our boss would not let us stay in anything that was over $30 a night. So, I mean, we have stayed in some real nice hotels.
We didn't want to waste your Lottie Moon Christmas offering.
That's right. And that's what he would tell us. So if a hotel got above our price range, we had to find a new hotel. Because he would remind us, you know, people in America are sacrificing so that we can be here. And we're not going to waste those Lottie Moon dollars. And we didn't, so we stayed in some nice places. This was actually a nicer hotel that we got to stay in. This is Amos is teaching with Srinivas. Srinivas has been working with the gypsies for years in that area. We actually met on a training school compound is where we're meeting. I was hoping we would go down to the area where he worked because it's actually a gypsy area there that he works in. And he lives among them and works among them. He also is kind of like a director of missions. He has many guys that work with him in that area. But his primary focus is for the gypsies. We taught about 55 to 60 people, young people that day. It was a conference for young people. After he found out, we wrote and told him we were coming, told him we would like to see him while we were there. And he emails me back and says, will you all do a conference for us on Saturday morning? And of course, I told him we would. And he said, this is for, young, gypsy people. That we want to see commit their lives to full-time Christian ministry. And there was about 55 to 60 of them there. 16 of them committed their lives to full-time Christian ministry that day. while we were there. So we were excited about that and excited about what they're going to do. This is just one of the modes of transportation in India. If you could imagine, try to imagine four fat Americans sitting in one of those. Because usually we would just take one. Sometimes we took two, but it's much cheaper to take one. And so we would, all three of them would get in the back, and one would sit up front with the driver, and we would go down the road with that. And here's just some of one of the traffic shots in Hyderabad. In fact, the traffic is very light this day, and this is not really a busy time, so you can see kind of what's going on there. And then we are now leaving India. We're flying home, and we arrived back home on the 19th, I think it was. And we had a marvelous time, and God blessed us while we were there. Do you have anything that you want to say before?
I just want to thank you all. And again, like I said, I want to thank the kids for the money that they took up and the part that they had in this. I wish they could have been in here this morning to see those children receiving the shoes and socks that they helped pay for, because it was really, truly wonderful.
And we do want to thank you for your gifts. Thank you for helping them. Jan and I do support both Adam and his ministry. We do support Sudansu. We send money. Jan sends money about once a month into them. If you would like to send to help them, talk to her. She's the one that does all that. I take all the credit. She does all the work. That's the way it's supposed to be. But if you would like to help them in some way, talk to her, and she will share with you how.
Even Sunday school classes, a couple of churches, Sunday school classes just take up money and send it whenever they get after about a month or so.
Okay. Yeah, we have a couple of churches here in our association. Their Sunday school class takes money up and sends to them. If you'd like to help Sudansu support a pastor for 3 years and just make a three-year commitment to that, $50 a month, to where these pastors can live and begin the work in that area again, let us know, and we will make certain that the money gets to them. We do not charge a finder's fee, and we do not charge a fee for shipping the money on. We're sending some anyway, so we send it Western Union into them, and we will be glad to do that if you would like to do that also. But thank you again for letting us serve you here. Thank you for letting us share with you today a little bit about India. We hope that God has spoken to your heart through this.